Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Hollywood Podcast, covering the latest in film, TV, streaming, and social media. I'm your host, Max Geschwind. Stay tuned for today's episode. Today, I'm joined by screenwriter Michael Brandt, whose latest film, Arthur the King, starring Mark Wahlberg and Simu Liu, is now playing in theaters. The film is an adaptation of adventure racer Mikael Lindnord's 2016 memoir, where he shares the story of how he befriended a wounded stray dog named Arthur, who then goes on to accompany the team on a 435-mile endurance race through the Dominican Republic. Michael's perhaps best known as the creator of the NBC series Chicago Fire, as well as being a producer and writer on Chicago PD and Chicago Med. His previous writing credits also include Wanted, 310 to Yuma, Catch That Kid, and Too Fast, Too Furious. Michael, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So we'd love to start at the beginning of your involvement with the story. How did you first come across Mikael's memoir, Arthur, the Dog Who Crossed a Jungle to Find a Home? And how quickly after reading it did you know that this needed to be the next script that you would pen?
Well, I had just spent 5 years deep in the Chicago world. And this is one of the first things I came across after getting back into movies. You know, I got, network TV is great. I could see myself back there someday, but I really, you know, I miss movies. It was something that was always important to me growing up. And when I was meeting with producers, this was one of the projects that came along that was really interesting. I don't think it was something that earlier in my career I would have considered. But when the Tucker Tooley, who was the producer, gave me the book and he told me that there was this, you know, really well done piece on ESPN that I watched. And the whole thing kind of in my head came together, not, and it was pretty specific of what, of the way I would want to do it, which was, look, there, this is an adventure racing team deep in the jungle, and they meet a dog. And there's a lot of different ways you can go about that. You can do the animated version. You could do the inner monologue of the dog's thoughts version. You could do the talking dog version, where all the dogs have conversations with each other. Or what I thought was, this is just a sports movie. And I love sports and I love movies about sports. And I thought that if I'm going to do the first thing after leaving Chicago is got to be something I'm really passionate about. And this was the one. And I went to New York and Mikael Lindnord was in Sweden. And we decided that let's meet each other. And we both met in New York and we sat down with our wives and we just had dinner. We just started talking about life and things kind of outside of the realm of this specific story. And I really just genuinely liked the guy. And I genuinely liked what he had become since this had all happened to him, because that was 7 years ago, you know. And at the time, you always have the best of hope that, oh, we're going to write the script and be in production next year. And 100% of the movies think that, and about, you know, 2% ever do that, if even that. So I've spent 7 years off and on thinking about Mikael and his trek and his journey and what happened with Arthur. And so that just led to, okay, let's do this and let's dig in, and having some very early conversations about what happened to in that jungle and how that changed Mikael. I think that was the very important part of the movie.
Can you talk about your collaboration with Mikael during the writing process, or what was he hands-on, or did you prefer writing it just relying on the text of his memoir specifically and not receiving his influence while you were in the writing phase?
Well, it's the way I want to approach things like this, whether you're adapting a novel or, you know, I've done some things about, you know, people who are still alive too, is gather as much information beforehand, make a ton of notes, have a ton of reference things and then go away from it all. And in some ways, even put some of those reference things away. Like I think that the brain kind of latches on to it will guide you if you've done your homework going forward. So getting to know Michael, talking about his life as a kid, his life with his father, which was really informed a lot of his decisions as an adult, and how he was as a husband and as a young father before he ever went into that jungle. I had all of that in my head, and I had this the actual events of the story in my head. You know, I'd read the book, I'd made notes, but then I put it away and just start writing. And because I kind of the belief that the most of the things that are still with me while I'm writing are the most important things. And so then they belong in the movie. And that doesn't mean I don't go back and look for details, but for the most part, it's like I try and get all the way through the script with what just interested me to start. And then, of course, you know, I go back with Michael and get involved in some of the technical stuff. But really, the collaboration was very easy in that he understood that this needed to be a movie, and for it to be a movie, certain things had to be, you know, either changed, condensed, or just lost completely.
I want to talk about Mark Wahlberg because he also had been involved in this project for several years now. Can you share how he came on board the film? And also, he's a producer in addition to being into playing Michael. So can you talk about working with him in that regard as Mark the producer, because you're also an executive producer of the film. So what that collaboration was like?
Well, there was when the script was done, I knew that they were out looking for actors, and by they I mean, you know, Tucker, who was, and Mark Canton, who were, and Dorothy Canton, who were the producers who really like were the boots on the ground, get the project up and running producers. And then just kind of out of nowhere, I got a call from an agent saying, "Hey, I'm Mark's agent. He loves this. We want to proceed." And I wasn't surprised that Mark wanted to do this, because I think it's kind of a perfect role for him. But I didn't really see that coming, because we you know, I don't necessarily have an actor in mind when I'm writing. The result of that, though, was everybody taking it seriously. I mean, that's just the power of your, you know, super A-list actor. And all of a sudden, this movie that we had originally sold to Paramount, and then that got spun out into five different things, and it was a little bit lost in the wilderness, like Arthur, I guess, to use a bad metaphor, is with Mark on board, it all of a sudden gets a lot of attention. And so that was all, like, COVID was coming at that point, you know, so we didn't know it. And here we are thinking that the movie's happening. And there was another director attached at one point who I actually went to Puerto Rico with to scout locations and talk story. And we spent quite a bit of time there thinking that that was happening. And then he had another movie that got greenlit before this did. And to Mark's credit, there were 100 times that a lot of actors would have said, "This is too difficult. I'm going to go do something else." And Mark never did that. And I said that to him when we first got to the Dominican. I said, "This is only happening because you stayed with it." You know, one director left. Mark, we actually had two director. Another director came on. That didn't work out. There were some other things behind the scenes in terms of writers, what that one director wanted, and that didn't happen, you know, thankfully for me. And we ended up right back with the script I'd written. And then COVID happened. And so there was just a lot of times that this all could have fallen apart. And in fact, when we were in the Dominican doing prep, and I will vouch, I was staying next to Mark, and I will say that 3, 4 a.m., those lights come on and that music starts going and he's working
Wow.
out. That even every day on set, and even while we were shooting, because of all the testing everybody's doing and everything, we just kept thinking, man, if the wrong person tests positive, you could see the insurance company saying, we're pulling the plug on this. And it really wasn't until we were in the last week or two of shooting that I ever felt comfortable that we were actually going to have a movie. So Mark gets a lot of credit for staying with that. He was the one who brought Simon on to direct. And that was just, it's a total testament to his belief in what the movie is.
Right. And that you had all the testing because this was still during the thick of COVID. I think you shot this around about 3 years ago in the early part of 2021, shortly after filming came back up and running after the hiatus. So it's definitely a long time coming with all the stops and starts, as you said. Wanted to know if you witnessed the first meetings or the interactions between Mark and Michael when they finally met after Mark came on board, and what you saw that made seem so right for Mark to come on board.
Yeah, it was a pretty special moment just for me because I had been, with Michael for at that point, I guess it was 4 years of spending time with Michael and writing the script and, a lot of conversations about what he wanted to portray in the movie in terms of his character. And then Mark comes on, and we were on the beach in the Dominican, and Michael and Mark met, and I just happened to be standing there, and they were immediately in a ocean kayak, and they went and just they I just was standing on the, in the waves, and they came kayaking past me, and I yelled like, I've been waiting 4 years to see this because they were both smiling. They're both very rugged, obviously outdoorsy, tough dudes. And I could just see this was a match made in heaven and that this really had a lot of potential. Because Michael is very, he's very giving. He's a strong-willed person, as anybody who does this kind of work or this kind of activity would be, but he's incredibly sweet, and Mark is very much the same way. And so it was a really good collaboration, and that was really satisfying. It's just one of those things, like when you're in the middle of COVID, you're never expecting that, 3 months later you're going to be on a beach somewhere and see, one of the biggest actors we have and this guy from Sweden whose little dog story you've been trying to tell kayak past you. That was pretty great.
The director is Simon Kellen-Jones, who's no stranger to working with Mark. I think his last film was The Family Plan that also starred Mark Wahlberg. So can you talk about what it was like working with Simon on the film?
Well, ironically, The Family Plan was shot after our movie too. So, Mark and Simon had known each other. He came on and was really one of the best experiences I've had in working with a director because, you have to hand the movie over to the director when you're the writer. And I've directed, and you just, there only can be one sheriff in town. Simon was incredibly gracious in terms of finding out what I wanted or what my intentions were. Because the rubber meets the road when you get to the locations and when you get to the island and you start looking around. And I can have dreams of shooting in Big Sur or Denver or Oahu all I want. But at some point, you're going to have to figure out how to make that work. So Simon and I spent a lot of time together, and he was really, really good to me in terms of what do you want out of this? How can I help us get that? And then gradually that relationship starts to change, where then it turns into me saying to him, okay, what is it you need? Are there things I can do to the script? Once he kind of won me over in terms of he was going to make the movie, I think that we were all on the same page. Then I was like, okay, man, like you tell me what you need, because we can rewrite this scene maybe for budgetary or schedule considerations. Maybe this thing we had planned in terms of the zip line, for instance, there's a zip line scene in there. Originally, I had conceived that when I was in Puerto Rico, there's a zip line where there's two lines right next to each other, so two people can zip at the same time. And I had just standing there, I'd come up with an idea for kind of a fun action scene on these two zip lines that are side by side. Well, then we get to the Dominican, and that doesn't exist, and you can't just throw up a second zip line. So I had to like kind of reconfigure and rethink about how that scene would go down with only one zip line. So there's things like that where, as a writer, at some point you have to realize, I had a dream. Now I have a reality. I got to figure out how to make those things work. And Simon and I were able to do that pretty well together.
Throughout your career in writing, I don't think you've ever had to write for a story where one of your main characters was not able to talk or emote like a human actor would. And that's obviously Arthur. So could you talk about the challenges of finding and successfully landing on the emotional touchstones of the story, knowing that one of your characters wouldn't be able to evoke a sort of emotion that would make it easy for the audience to react necessarily?
It kind of fell into place because in the end, Arthur in reality is an enigmatic character. Like there's kind of a beauty of how did this guy make it here? How, like the wondering, how did he get from this place to this place? Why did he come from this place to this place? And ultimately, these are unanswerable questions. We don't know what's going through Arthur's head. We don't know how he got from this place in the jungle to where we are now, 300 miles away. And there's something very special about that. There's some that it. So for me, it's what do the other people think who are looking at Arthur and imagining what he's thinking, what he went through, because we'll never know. So I never felt compelled to put a voice in his head. You know, even if we weren't going to hear it, it was really more about other observers trying to understand and figure out who Arthur was and why he was here. And it was that questioning of it, which I think kind of keeps it really special. In terms of just him as a character, he's almost like he's like a beacon in a way of like, this is this. Yes, he's a character in the movie, but it's almost like this light that follows us through the trees, and we're always wondering what this light is. So let's talk about it. And as we talk about it, then Arthur can just sit there and the camera can linger on his face, and it lets us all kind of imagine the best version of Arthur. And when you see him and you see his face and you know the story, well, that best version does kind of play out in a lot of ways. But I never really had to write like the Arthur inner monologue. And even the scenes before Michael meets Arthur, we can only guess as to what he went through. But there's evidence by the time he shows up and eats that meatball, just based on his physical appearance of what he's been through and what other dogs had gone through as well. So again, that was all like me, let me try and imagine what he's been through, but it's really kind of like lifting him up into this otherworldly kind of figure, which he really did represent in the race and for Michael later in life, all the way through.
Could you talk about Michael's first reaction after watching it? I'm sure that that must have been such a satisfying moment for you after years of working on it, finally having the real life subject watch it for the first time. So, what was that moment like?
Well, there were quite a few moments because it
Oh,
was,
okay.
I mean, there were quite a few moments with Michael seeing and doing things that kind of forced him to, because Arthur died right before he started shooting. So we get on set And they bring you Kai. I mean, we get to the Dominican and they bring you Kai around, who looks exactly like Arthur. And I mean, it was weird for me, and I didn't bring Arthur home from a jungle and live with him for 5 years. You know, seeing Michael have to deal with, wow, this is the dog that's playing Arthur and it looks just like Arthur. And you kind of happens to be an amazing, fun dog. That, like, watching Amir, for instance, like, his kids had never seen a cut of the movie, and they were sitting right in front of me at the premiere, and they're 10 and 8 years old now, I think. And now they grew up with Arthur. Arthur passed away a couple years ago, and now here's a movie where that dog looks just like Arthur. But when the movie was over, those kids were bawling. But it wasn't like, it was sad because Arthur was gone, but it was also like, wow, we have this tribute movie to him too. So there's been a lot of those kind of moments. It's kind of hard to pin them all down. I can't imagine the roller coaster that Michael and his family have been on over the last few years, and especially the last month or two.
Congratulations with Arthur the King. It's 7 years in the making, as you said, and to have it finally come out this weekend, I'm sure is so satisfying. And it's already doing so well at the box office. So, Michael, I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Max. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Please take a moment to subscribe to the Hollywood Podcast for free on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Until next time, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Max Geschwind. Thanks for listening.